militares allá, y ves la forma como ahora, después de los sucesos de Colombia de muchos años, han empezado de unos años para acá a actuar estas bandas en Venezuela, evidentemente que ve que han trasladado un modelo de actuación. Y no es extrañar, porque se dice que el jefe de estas bandas, el jefe de los paramilitares en Colombia, y es público notorio, fue Álvaro Uribe. Álvaro Uribe es un manifiesto enemigo de Venezuela y del gobierno de Venezuela, que coadyuva en este esfuerzo de desestabilización con la oposición.
La violencia vivida en Venezuela durante el último mes responde, según este análisis, a un manual prototípico de lo que se conoce como un golpe suave, la elaboración de una estrategia en diferentes fases y con las calles como protagonistas para derrocar al gobierno de turno. Esther Yáñez, Caracas, Venezuela, Telesur.
El canciller ruso Sergei Lavrov visita los Estados Unidos y después de reunirse con el secretario de Estado y con el primer mandatario Donald Trump, asegura que ambos son hombres de negocios y que el diálogo está libre de prejuicios ideológicos. Nicolás Sánchez O'Donovan amplía la información.
Ha sido una jornada intensa de reuniones para Sergei Lavrov en Washington, que primero se vio con su homólogo, el secretario de Estado, Rex Tillerson. Lo hizo en la sede del Departamento de Estado. En esa reunión se trataron temas de importancia para ambos países, temas bilaterales, pero también las situaciones en Ucrania y sobre todo en Siria, que ha sido el tema que han discutido ambos países durante los últimos años. De hecho, Lavrov aseguró que están trabajando para progresar hacia una solución política en Siria, respetando siempre los acuerdos y sin obsesionarse con la salida de Bashar al-Assad, sino centrándose en la lucha contra el terrorismo, que es algo que interesa tanto a Moscú como a Washington. El ministro de Exteriores ruso también admitió que las relaciones bilaterales no se encuentran en su mejor momento, pero que están trabajando ahora para mejorarlas después de que se vieran desmejoradas durante la administración Obama, la que tildó de ser demasiado ideológica. Ha dicho que la administración Trump trabaja más en cosas específicas y menos ideológicas, no es más práctica. Antes de ese encuentro con Rex Tillerson, ambos políticos, tanto Sergei Lavrov como el propio Tillerson, posaron brevemente para los medios de comunicación. Obviamente recibieron preguntas sobre la destitución de James Comey como director del FBI, y ante la insistencia de los periodistas, Lavrov contestó con humor. Lo escuchamos. Ahí escuchábamos a Lavrov bromear ante los periodistas, un Lavrov que también se reunió con el presidente estadounidense, con Donald Trump. Lo hizo en la Casa Blanca, a puerta cerrada, dentro del despacho Oval. Donald Trump dijo que este encuentro fue satisfactorio.
Hemos tenido una reunión muy buena con el señor Lavrov, muy, muy buena.
Y Lavrov subrayó que se está trabajando para un posible encuentro entre el propio Donald Trump y Vladimir Putin en un futuro cercano. Preguntado sobre la posible interferencia de Rusia en las elecciones estadounidenses del año pasado, pues bien, el canciller aseguró pues que son acusaciones falsas y que no se ha presentado ni una sola prueba. Vamos a escuchar ya a Sergei Lavrov.
Creo que es humillante para el pueblo estadounidense escuchar que la política interna en Estados Unidos está dirigida por Rusia. ¿Cómo es posible que una gran nación, que un gran país, piense en estos términos? Pienso que los políticos perjudican sustancialmente el sistema político de Estados Unidos cuando tratan de insinuar que alguien gobierna Estados Unidos desde fuera.
Ahí escuchábamos la reflexión de Sergei Lavrov, un Sergei Lavrov que tuvo una jornada de encuentros y reuniones intensa aquí en Estados Unidos con los máximos representantes del gobierno estadounidense.
En noticias relacionadas, la destitución del director del FBI, James Comey, ha sido relacionada por algunos medios como clave que revela presuntos lazos entre el presidente Donald Trump y Rusia. La investigadora Jessica Lilian de Alba Ulloa sostiene que el ya exdirector del FBI se encontraba en una situación muy comprometedora en el contexto de las elecciones presidenciales del pasado 8 de noviembre. Escuchemos.
La situación de Comey me parece que fue muy poco agradable, en el sentido en que se encontraba en un momento clave del proceso electoral de Estados Unidos, y como se dice, mal si no lo haces y también mal si lo haces. Por lo tanto, se encontraba en una situación muy comprometedora. Me parece que decidió hacerlo y entonces tendría que apegarse a esa misma decisión que tomó antes de las elecciones. No habría por qué estar teniendo segundos pensamientos en este momento, ya cuando ha pasado tiempo del hecho. Si haces algo, tienes que tener bases fundamentales para hacerla, y no nada más porque se te ha ocurrido. Por lo tanto, no tendrían que criticarle esto que hizo. Claro, los demócratas lo van a hacer porque desde su punto de vista esto le dio el gane a Trump y hizo justamente que Hillary perdiera las elecciones. Ahora, con el caso de Rusia, son investigaciones que de todas maneras están en curso. No me parece que esté ligada una con la otra. Tomemos también en cuenta que dentro de la investigación de Rusia se pone en duda si el presidente de entonces, Barack Obama, dejó que los aparatos de inteligencia también investigaran al candidato Donald Trump en ese proceso.
El economista Michael Hudson dice que los señores del poder de la Comunidad Europea no están negociando con el gobierno de Grecia las formas de pago de la deuda externa helénica. Más bien, le han ordenado a Atenas que la economía se ha contraído en un 20% y necesita reducirse en un 5% más. Los salarios deben ser rebajados en un 10% y las pensiones deberán cortarse. Añade que probablemente entre el 5 y el 10% de la población griega activa tendrá que emigrar. La intención es reducir los ingresos del Estado helénico en una acción deliberada para obligar al gobierno griego a vender propiedades públicas a los inversionistas extranjeros. Hudson subraya que la relación de Grecia con los banqueros no es diferente a la de los bancos que prestan dinero para comprar casa a una familia que saben de antemano que ésta no podrá pagar su deuda. El economista de la Universidad de Missouri en Kansas señala que las reglas del Fondo Monetario Internacional no permiten que banqueros presten dinero a un país que no puede pagar sus deudas en el futuro inmediato. Pero entonces el titular del FMI introdujo la nueva regla del problema sistémico, la cual dejaba claro que si Grecia no pagaba a los banqueros internacionales, bonistas y el presupuesto de la Unión Europea, tendrían problemas. Así se otorgó el préstamo a Grecia. Y así concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre del Toshley y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Good evening, my friends. Afternoon and day. This is our duck here, asking you to help us find a new studio location, $500 to the one that can provide. If you know such a spot, it needs, a bathroom, electricity, ability to connect internet and telephone. Dry would be nice. We all thank you in advance for your support of this truly community-operated pirate radio station. 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Send us an email with your knowledge, frsc@freakradio.org. We thank you in advance.
This is Ward Churchill saying, get yourself a mind transplant. Listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's yet another edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Catch us before the station flies away. 2 hours now to until 8 o'clock of lots of reports from the May 9th rally at City Hall and a bit of discussion of the thoroughly bogus homelessness report that the council slated for its 7 o'clock session last Tuesday. Stay tuned and learn if you if you find anything worth learning.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me laugh. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. A song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And, of course, howdy, howdy. This is Bathrobe Spears, Broadsides. No call-in at this time because we still don't have a studio. And there is, however, a number to call if you have comments about the show. You can even call while the show is on, but you probably won't get an answer until later, although the show is pre-recorded. So it's possible I may pick up and say, what didn't you like? Or, oh, you like that? Or, what would you like me to put on the show next time? Or, what news aren't I covering that you think should be covered, that perhaps mainstream media or alternative, easily accessible online media are not covering? A number of areas I haven't been covering and would like more information on are the latest antics of the Board of Stupid Vipers, or supervisors, if you will, that around the issue of cannabis cultivation and cannabis use and cannabis access for low-income people. I note a continued reefer madness in the mainstream media, the Scent Anal, for instance, which is talking about the need to have more tests for marijuana drivers. And now, I'm not necessarily advocating lots of smoking before driving, but I haven't seen any stats on the extent of marijuana-impaired driving, let's say, compared to alcohol-impaired driving, or, I don't know, prescription medication-impaired driving. Now, this is the same kind of stuff, I'm afraid, that we've been hearing for nearly a century, and that has been used to ruin the lives of millions. I mean, literally millions of people through jail, probation, seizure of property. It hasn't ended. It's still going on, and we're still fighting it. And I don't have the stats here in California. I'd like to have them, and the stats here specifically in Santa Cruz, actually, is what I meant. who's in jail for marijuana or drug-related activity, how much of the local police, sheriffs, etc. budget is going to this victimless crime, but nice cash cow for the law enforcement agency's activity. I noticed in the media newspaper recently, there's a debate about whether to renew a piece of legislation that increases or continues heavy surveillance in prisons to stop, I don't know, heroin coming in soap bars or meth coming in as part of toothpaste. I think I got one of those wrong. But, you know, it's sort of paranoid obsession with medications, as though that had anything to do with the health or safety of folks. It wasn't some sort of prior ideology, almost a religious ideology, that the taxpayers are funding. It obsessed me because not only is it wrong and evil and abusive to human beings in and of itself, but it sets the stage for police state activity on a much broader level on other, using other pretexts, like the war on terrorism. And, of course, the general push toward war, generally, shared by both the Democrats and the Republicans, you know, all you Bernie Sanders fans, take note, is not just eating up a whole lot of money, not just killing a whole lot of people abroad, but is threatening to kill all of us. Not to mention the latest ridiculous antics of the Democrats and Republicans around the Comey firing, which, of course, was obviously another one of Trump's impulsive, opportunistic activities, which the issue to me are the issues that Trump is simply emphasizing, exacerbating, playing his harp on, that the Democrats have been playing on for years as well and don't want to challenge directly. Instead, they rather just get back into power by denouncing Trump, maybe getting impeached and getting Pence. Hey, good work, guys. Brilliant move. What are we going to do in Santa Cruz about this? Well, to me, it means clearly clarifying the issues and demanding our local politicians pay attention to those issues and act on the will of the community. And I'm hoping the will of the community has to do things like ending the wars, ending the war on the poor, ending the war on drugs, and so forth. So a couple of quick updates, which I may kind of repeat in the course of the broadcast, because I'll be playing, as you regular listeners know, audios that I interrupt with commentary somewhat endlessly, but hopefully educationally. I've been in communication with some former activist, city councilwoman, and she was a former Citizens Police Review Board activist when there was a Citizens Police Review Board way back in the late 90s and early aughts, Sandy Brown. And Sandy Brown is also, she treats me like a personal friend, which is nice when I see her, you know, visiting her at her office as a councilwoman or call her on the phone. She's very accessible. Well, not too sure how recently accessible, but has been accessible by phone. Her phone number is 831-246-0399. Again, go grab a pencil and write that down if you want to get in touch with her. 246-0399, area code 831. 246-0399. That is her cell phone. And I mention it because I think, and she's okayed my mentioning it publicly and on the air, and we've mentioned it, in fact, before, I believe, repeatedly. I've usually been getting an answering machine, but she has in the past called back. Anyway, the issue with Sandy Brown is you'll hear her saying good things at city council, and along with Councilmember Crone, who raised a lot of sort of significant questions to the homelessness ha-ha report. But more on Brown and Crone in a moment. I'm on the line with activist Keith McHenry, and I believe also Abby Samuels is there. Am I correct?
Abby Samuels is sitting next to me, yeah.
All right, well, make sure you mine her for ideas.
Okay, I will.
These are activists.
I may pass the phone on, too,
exactly.
Or if you think that's important.
That works.
You both are activists with Food Not Bombs, Freedom Sleepers, and you recently were part of a major protest at City Hall on Tuesday, which was raising issues of no penalty for poverty, renters' rights, and a number of other issues. We've talked about that, and I'm going to be playing a lot of stuff on the air today about that. But there's been kind of an aftermath in that regard, because we are, not only do the Freedom Sleepers come every Tuesday, but the Survival Sleepers come every other night and often during the day to find a place to sleep or even just rest during the day. And you've been, I guess, some of you concerned about maybe improving conditions, if not for the Survival Sleepers, well, certainly for them, but for the Freedom Sleepers for sure, by conversations with City Manager Martin Bernal. I understand that you've had some chats with him, and what's the update?
Yeah, well, we did, and our goal was to try to find out what some of the plans are in the future. And they still remain a bit fuzzy because we couldn't quite pin them down. But one of the things that's been a concern is we've been hearing rumors from, like, employees around the area, rangers, some people at the library, that there are going to be big changes at City Hall. And what we cut out of as a potential big change, you wouldn't say yes or no, but we've understood that there's signs already made, ordered, and that this is that the City Hall would be closed after business hours. So that's how he put it, business hours. What we know from that the business hours are technically 8 to 5. So there, you know, it's...
Let me ask you, Keith, did he actually say this to you in the last couple of days? I know this has been a rumor floating around, but has this been confirmed by him?
To us on Monday, by him.
I'm sorry, say that again.
On Monday, he said that this was what he was considering. You know, he was dancing around it. At first, he was saying, well, it's going to be signs that talk about no smoking, things like that. They were, you know, but then as we kept going, he finally came clean and to some certain extent and said it was going to be restrictions on being at the in the park, which would be City Hall, from you know, outside of, you couldn't be there after business hours. So that would be business hours posted on the walls and on the website is 8 to 5.
Now, have you had any subsequent conversations with him after that point? Because I know he came to the protest and he actually handed the key to the Freedom Sleepers for the bathrooms, which was an unusual move, probably prompted by the presence of children and Micah Posner sleeping there that night, the next night to that on Tuesday. That's a couple nights ago. Anything subsequent to Tuesday night?
No actual conversations with him other than that, you know, we have no idea about, you know, we haven't talked to him, so we don't know about anything more going on with that. You know, we get rumors from...
Well, regarding rumors...
Well, staff tells us that it was really great to have the bathrooms open.
Did that go well?
Yeah, they said it was very... The area was quite a bit cleaner than had been, and it was really... They were... They mentioned that they were like really liked the bathrooms being open. That was really good.
And were the bathrooms open as I heard rumored that the next night as well with a monitor there?
I don't know if we. Well, when was the? Did we sleep at home last night? I don't know. Oh yeah. I wasn't here last night. Was the bathrooms open last night? No. The bathrooms were not open last night.
Okay. Because there was a rumor that Micah was going to monitor them until midnight, and then someone else was going to monitor them.
And apparently that did not happen. There were no bathrooms.
Maybe that was for next Tuesday's Freedom Sleep Out.
My suspicion. So there's been a little bit of debate between some of us, and Micah was hoping to get the bathrooms opened every Tuesday night for the Freedom Sleepers. I pointed out that the purpose of the Freedom Sleepers is to be here in support of ending repression against people living outside, and it would be kind of rude to just have the bathrooms open only when the house protesters were here, when the purpose is to have them open for the people that don't have houses so that they can go every night, all night long. And so he saw the logic in that. That's really, and oddly enough, the people that clean the bathrooms and clean the area around City Hall and do all that really like the idea of the bathroom.
That's what you were saying. Also, of course, it's true that once we get the bathrooms at City Hall open, which is a goal of Zav and his Give a Shit campaign, which he was working on with Huff it's been almost a year now, unsuccessfully, but still building up pressure around that issue. I guess the pressure is building up for people all over the city. That's another story. Any sense of, there's no plan to open up bathrooms generally at night, which might actually not just help the freedom sleepers and the survival sleepers, but actually homeless people, not to mention tourists.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course it would be like a smart idea, and it's a shame it's not happening, but maybe it will, and it's hard to say what the situation is with that.
You also mentioned there were no arrests, I guess, on Tuesday night and no tickets. I guess maybe there was one problem. First Alarm had a mistake. I think I haven't really covered that, but First Alarm was called. First Alarm thought, oh, there's somebody using the bathroom, which was supposed to be allowed, and then they called the police, and the police said, no, that's fine. But has there been any problems since for the survival sleepers that you've heard about?
There was an arrest midday today, but when we're down here now at City Hall to find out what the details of that are.
Okay, and we'll pass that on.
We just got here. Well, we arrived during the interview, so I haven't talked to anybody about whether people got jacked up last night or if they're generally being jacked up or what's going on.
Okay, well, we can get a report from you later on that. What do you think of the idea? Does Food Not Bombs has been working hard to serve people food with limited resources, and I know that a lot of us other activists say, why doesn't Food Not Bombs do this? Why doesn't Food Not Bombs do that? But the truth is, you're doing a lot as best you can. On the other hand, there is this momentum that has been built up, not so much because the city council gives a shit about the homeless issues, but people seem to have wanted to come on Tuesday to raise the issue. Do you think that they're likely to come back on the 23rd, the next council meeting? And is there a possibility of Food Not Bombs and other groups actually merging behind that for a second enlarged protest?
Oh, absolutely. There are definitely plans, and trying to figure out exactly what we know what we want to do basically, of course, is keep up the pressure, continue sweeping out, get as many people out of march or rally as possible, things like that. We know the chancellor of the university is coming here, and an issue of housing affordability certainly is linked to students and increased students coming to campus and real estate speculators realizing they can make a lot of money off of the increased population that students represent. And so that's a lot of it definitely is linked. And so I know students were already organizing a protest against the at the city council, and we're planning to keep up the pressure.
I mean, that's because... that's because in part, isn't it, Keith, that because the chancellor is going to be at the city council on that May 23rd meeting, right?
Yeah, the chancellor is going to be at the meeting to speak about something, I don't know, something related to the university. So, that's why students originally started getting, in part, got involved. They knew the chancellor would be speaking to city council, and they wanted to start building momentum on campus. And that's why there was a coalition of student groups and community activists and survival sleepers to organize for the Not May 9. And there were like 54 people slept out, and including children, which was interesting in that, it's supposed to be very scary here and everything. And you hear the most common thing is the children. Well, the children survived, and from all evidence of seeing them during the breakfast, they were very happy. And so the I think there will be a big mobilization. I think we got to get together with the student groups and see what it is they're planning and how we can support it and how it can be related to ending attacks against the homeless in the community.
How can people
and
help?
Yeah. Then the other thing is, of course, there was a lot of reference in the city council meeting to the 23rd, and with, I guess, some kind of implication that staff is supposed to be finding ways to get money and stuff. So something about the report. So I should go because we now have a bunch of things going on down here at City Hall, and I got to get back to it.
Well, get to it. We've been talking with.
And this is Keith with Funa Bonds.
Thanks, Keith.
A little hard to have dialogue on a speakerphone, but Keith, I suspect if you want to help with this demonstration, you can get in touch with Keith and Abby through Food Not Bombs, which has meals Saturday and Sunday, starting at 4:00 at the post office, right next to the forbidden post office fence raised to make sure that no dirty, vile, evil homeless people sleep under the eaves of the post office, which is, as you know, a sacred monument to the American kindness, compassion, and forward-lookingness. Obviously, other organizations are also involved, such as the student groups up on campus, such as the tenant groups in Santa Cruz, and of course HUF, the group I'm with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which did actually have a meeting yesterday. I had thought there really has been sparse attendance at meetings recently. Perhaps the other groups are drawing people's attention, or perhaps HUF is a little too cranky for the majority's activist sentiment, I don't know, or who knows what. But in any case, HUF is continuing to meet. We'll be meeting again next Wednesday at the Sub Rosa Cafe. You're welcome to come and check us out. If you have questions or comments, not just on this show, but on how to involve yourself with Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which you can find online at the website hufsantacruz.org, this is the place to go. This phone number that I gave before, 423-4833, or if you will, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. Hearing a lot of the voices from the different organizations supporting the May 9th rally, and perhaps another rally on May 23rd, as well as, of course, the Freedom Sleep Out 97 that will be happening on the 16th, next Tuesday. That should be coming up shortly, and those voices can speak just as clearly, if not more, than I can. I have my usual cautionary concerns, which I'll bring up again, which is there was a discussion among some activists wanting to talk to city manager Martine Bernal, who really is the big honcho in the city, about coming to an understanding as to how things can be improved. And Bernal, apparently, a rumor had it, was seeking to get the Freedom Sleepers to leave, if only what could be done. Oh, maybe you can go protest somewhere else for a week. Or, hey, we'll open up the bathrooms if you get rid of all those survival sleepers during the day. In other words, turning activists against each other, or turning them into policing agents under the guise of calling this some kind of compromise. I encourage activists to avoid any of this, and I think they are. But it's an ever-present danger. It split the movement repeatedly in the past. It happened particularly notably in 1990 when Sherry Connable and Margaret Marr were leading a somewhat more conservative group that kind of jumped in after activists on the street had held down a protest literally for 6 months outside the main post office day and night at what was a series of homeless tables giving out literature and signing people up and sleeping there at night and getting arrested and coming back. And we held a large 4th of July rally in 1990, which invited and actually got the support of homeless activists all over the state. There were hundreds of people who came to town to support it. But liberals, under the leadership of Sherry Connable and Margaret Marr, Paul Brindell, and others, who do good work in many other ways, decided this was the opportunity to liberalize everything, jump in front of the parade, and calm everybody down, get some assistance from more conservative quarters, and maybe some benefits for homeless people. The only benefits that came out of it was, I think, a reduction in the number of tickets for a couple of the activists who, I think, were seduced by this whole process. Jabberwocky Jay Green and Paddywagon Pete Pascoe, as he was known, as well as Karen Gillette, who is sort of part of the Connable Marr team that sort of tamed all the protesters and sort of quieted them down, eliminated the six-month-long homeless tabling, and reassured then-Mayor Marty Wormhout that things would be mellow. A de facto area called the Back 40, which some of you real old-timers may remember, it's an area, was a sort of a field which now houses the Page Smith Community House, or at the high intersection of Highways 9 and Highway 1, where people were allowed to sleep, although there were no tents allowed. You had to be gone by dawn. There were no real rules, and there was no legalization for free people over the city, but some people could sleep there, and they weren't driven away as forcefully and regularly as in other places, at least in some cases. What I'm saying is that moderates with good intentions can split a movement, and the way often that this can also, this seems to be happening, for example, with activist Brent Adams, who has been a man of principle, struggling to video police abuses, a part of the Occupy movement who suffered through, I think, false, he felt he was betrayed by other activists in the Occupy movement who had actually organized the River Street, 75 River Street, vacant bank building occupation, which, as far as my mind, was a positive action, although in many respects it was considered a fiasco by others, because it turns up, it gave the authorities an excuse to attack the rest of the Occupy, which was happening anyway, though. Anyway, there are activists who believe that a more conservative approach appealing to the city council, groups even like Take Back Santa Cruz, as sort of potential allies, can, you know, somehow smooth the road and establish something workable. And Brent has struggled to get this a broader coalition or an appeal to the more conservative folks with his Sanctuary Camp, Sanctuary Village, and his successful warming center. You're going to hear me debating with him somewhat angrily on later, I think, if not today on this show, then on Sunday when I'll play some more of these audios from the May 9th rally. And, of course, you know, it's a matter of what you think is successful in any immediate situation. I mean, there are no hard and fast rules, obviously. The future is not written in stone or in, you know, permanent ink. You can't tell what's going to come next. What worked yesterday may not work tomorrow. But there are still lessons I think we can learn from the past, at least we should consider. And I'm always wary of trusting in the promises of authorities that have the power when they're asking you to surrender your power in order to trust in their good faith. See, that, I think, is a bad deal from the get-go. And it's true, I'm framing it in abstract terms, so I think it's something you really should consider as a danger, although it may be an appropriate action in some specific situations. And it isn't even really being actively proposed here, so perhaps I'm going on too long. Let me take a musical break and do a little meditating, a few deep breaths, and I'll be back.
writing rules, from the sweatshop prisons to the cops in the schools. Got the middle class living like it's gonna last, working longer, harder hours for less and less cash. Got the media spins, Republic rat twins. Got the war profiteer, corporate executive grins. Got the heroin running through the veins of the poor. Got the ghettos locked down, paying blood for the war. Got the cities to pay, the dealers to pay, and the death squads working for the CIA. New jobs inside a thousand new jails, outsourcing the unions, profit dipping the scales. Got a brainwashed youth, a trumped up truth. Got snipers armed with rifles on the factory roof. You got a 30-minute speech full of oohs and ahs. Got the cops armed tough out there breaking the laws. Got the front row seat to your own defeat. You got the tear gas canisters filling the streets. The laws all written for the rich and the white. Trick the rest of them fools into the army to fight. In a dead-end game, each war the same. You got a land that a people and a market to claim. Got a woman beaten down everywhere that you look. In the courts, in the jails, in the schools, in the books. Got the TV set, sexism ballet. Got a culture full of men taught to fall for that shit. Yeah, and I do too. I'm not blaming you, but I'm trying to unlearn what they said was true. Yeah, and I need help. I'm not afraid to say it. It's a subliminal tool. Sometimes it's hard to see it. You got your own room, got the pen and the paper and a drive to consume. Got the suit pressed in, got the myth that you'll win, and the race to replace true ambition. You're gonna move up the ladder at the company speed. Gotta learn to dance quick for the company's greed. Gotta justify every step that you can with your eyes closed tight and your head in the sand. You gotta fight the desire to fight the police. You gotta fight your heart and your every belief. You gotta trust the leader, whatever he says, with the flag held high. Yeah, you're already dead, you already gave up. If you took their advice, if you played their game, you paid their price, and you're gone, gone, gone. Yeah, there's no coming back unless you realize your potential. Raise your fist and react. To each other and to ourselves, that ignore the phony remedies they stock on the shelves. We can undermine the greed on which the system depends in hopes to build a new world based on lovers and friends. We gotta build from the bottom what we want at the top. We gotta work together if we want this to stop. From the thick grassroots to the top of the tree, I aim for peace and justice and anarchy. I want peace and justice and anarchy. I want peace and justice.
Peace, justice, and anarchy, Ryan Harvey. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1, and that's a song that we've heard before, but if you've been regularly listening to the show, but I liked it. So I played it again. I'll be playing more of his stuff. 101.3 FM, Freak Radio, is where you're listening. FreakRadio.org is where you go if you want to find us online, which is a good place to go also if you want to catch older shows, or if you missed this show and you want to hear it because you're out of town or out of breath or out of tune with us or whatever. Another mandatory announcement, but it's just as important as ever, and in fact it's becoming more important. We need a studio. Not much space is required, 10 by 10. We just need electricity. We need internet, a place to poop. And it may be that this station is going to essentially sort of, it's not going to implode or explode. It's just going to sort of whimper away if we don't get the studio. Because folks don't want to join the collective, and folks are straying from the collective because there's no place to go other than try to create shows at home, which is hard to do. And if you're doing that, why not just do a podcast? So if you like Free Radio, if you've been enjoyed what you've heard, help us find this 10 by 10 space. It can be anywhere in the city. It can be outside, inside, and we'll pay for it. You know, $300 a month we can go for, we can share.
the space with other people. If there's a larger space, we'll be happy to pay our portion of it. Also, you'll get a reward if you actually find this, which already some activists collected when they found us a place which we were able to stay in for 6 months, actually longer, 9 months. And that's a $500 reward you'll get. That's, you know, it's enough to keep you in coffee for at least a couple of weeks. So, think about it. Give a call to 423-4833 if you have any ideas. 423-4833, or you can go to the freakradio.org website. Freakradio, one word, small letters, freakradio.org. Most of this broadcast is going to be taken up with Freedom Sleepers and the May 9th march that happened a couple days ago. But here's a bit from May 7th from what I call interviews with the survival sleepers, which these are the people who actually were there almost every night, not just, you know, for a little glamour time with potential media when you get some actual food services that show up, although there are food donations on other nights. These are folks who are there when the rest of us, myself included, aren't. And, well, let's hear some of their voices.
Here at the survival sleepout, Sunday night, May 7th. The sun is setting in the west. I'm parked across the street taking a peek, and already there are one, two, three, four people on the sidewalk, and the familiar squad car rounding the bend and slowing down. And there are folks parked at the under the eaves up there. Some folks standing. I'm going to count. Also, there's a long tarp-draped area between bike and parking meter that Viper has, which he described at Sleepout 95 that happened last Tuesday. And I'll get out and try to figure out what's going on here. Hey,
working with Hans Albertson.
And Hans, how long have you been here for now? Hi, Claudia.
It's been 8 days today. 8 days.
And how's it been?
It's been fine with the exception of this half over here. Our half has been quiet and calm and polite.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys down here are fairly rowdy and loud. And
there's a loud section and a quiet section?
Yes, as crazy as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worked out that way. The police have been very kind.
No tickets last night?
No tickets last night. No tickets for a few nights, as a matter of fact, I don't think. But we were pretty much just solo, four, five, six, out of eight of us here in this area. And then
the side of the city, all with the city council offices.
Yes. And then the other side just started infiltrating kind of sort of the last two nights with just bad language and late night and, you know, all kinds of stuff happening there. But I think little by little might be happening. I don't know what's planned, but it's been peaceful for the most part.
Much support from other people in the community coming to donate stuff.
Yes, wonderful support. Just a few, every so often somebody will pull up with some food or some drink and vegetables. And so, we had a guy last evening that is from Boulder Creek that is collecting sleeping bags and blankets and pillows. From the community, and I can't remember what his name is, but he has been distributing along Pacific Avenue and some other places there for the homeless people. And he's a wonderful guy, and so hopefully he'll continue to do that.
How's the temperature at night?
Cold as hell. I mean, it's freezing cold. It's bitterly cold. It's just the transition from daytime to nighttime is faster than anywhere I've ever been ever in my life. I've been to a lot of places, but it drops so quickly. And then the wind as it kicks up too. It's been absolutely brutal. I don't have a blanket. I have a blanket, but it's just a very small one and nothing for underneath. I'm sleeping on top of my bags. Again, this is a new experience for me. 62 years old, and due to just a few little things, I've become homeless. But the thing is, everybody kind of helps themselves out. I've been hustling, going out to work. I've been able to take care of a lot of my special things driver's license, Medi-Cal, all kinds of good things. It's helping me out. I've been hunting for work. Hopefully tomorrow I'll find out if I have work.
What kind of work are you looking for?
Construction, primarily. I've been up to Boulder Creek and Ben Lomond, going to the lumberyards up there, looking at the bulletin boards there at the contractor, so I can get my name, call some of them and see if they're hiring. I've got 44 years in the biz, and I'd love to help these people rebuild after the last winter. So that's kind of one of the things I'm shooting towards, to see if I can get up and help some of those people at the same time.
Is there much interest in the upcoming May 9th event, the march and the...
I haven't heard a whole lot from, it was from Abby and Keith, and we had a bit of a stink the other night when they had a thing here with the Star Wars. The Rangers came in and they started yanking everybody's stuff out of here because to set, clean it up, and I had a...
Why did you say Star Wars?
Because it was a little convention. I guess it had planned. They wanted to sit here on the bricks. And then they had another a smaller thing over there at the library. So everybody had to get out until dark.
Wednesday or Thursday, something?
No, it was Wednesday. And then when it was dark, everybody could come back in and bed down.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I only know about some of this from rumors, so some of these things I'm saying may not be entirely accurate. Some of them may be completely off. My understanding was the library was going to be a place for a public get-together of a group. I guess it was a Star Wars convention, but there had problems in the library that required evacuating it or not being there, so they had to spill over to the City Hall. And instead of acknowledging that City Hall is a public space during the day, you cannot run people away, they decided to pretend that it wasn't, pretend that it was private property, and drive all the homeless people out by seizing their property and taking it away. In trucks, and I think I reported on this a little bit on my Sunday show. That's my understanding. I wasn't there, and I'm not quite clear. This is the first time I've heard the word Star Wars described as part of the topic of the convention that apparently was the pretext. Well, not just the pretext. It was the reason that the police moved in, but not because of any bad behavior by homeless people. Just the notion that City Hall would be... inhabited by these homeless folks, some of whom might be drinking, yes, alcohol, it's true. And there might even be one or two people with the hypodermic needles somewhere in that situation. And I know everyone will start screaming in horror. But the fact of the matter is, this is what is the reality for not just people outside, but people inside too. And the notion that somehow you can clear people away from public spaces, and unless you want to arrest them for criminal behavior, and you can. If you want to catch someone with an open container, that's a crime. You know, arrest them if you want. You want to find someone who's shooting up, that's a crime too. I don't think it should be, frankly. I think that you need to establish safe injection centers, which is what health activist Tia presented at the city council on May 9th when there was this large supportive crowd. Take Back Santa Cruz people didn't appear because, of course, as Steve Plage pointed out, they didn't need to. They were all represented on the council, and the council was proceeding with the Take Back Santa Cruz agenda anyway. So you can have all these homeless activists and renter activists mouthing off all they want, as long as they shut up and be quiet and put their hands in their lap when the votes are taken, and then go home quietly and don't come back, except possibly for a little well-behaved protests, which... Well, we'll see if the people will accept these kinds of really suffocating restrictions. Let's hear some more from May 7th from the survival sleeper Hans.
In order to clear everything out, I had just gotten back from Boulder Creek on the job search, and my stuff was in the back of one of the Ranger pickups heading to the trash bins. And fortunately, within 10 seconds, I had gotten back here. I asked the guy, please, 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 please. And so he was kind enough. He said, 30 seconds to get it out.
How sweet of him.
Yes, it was. And that was too.
I don't think it was sweet of him. I think that he was, his bullshit was taking your stuff.
Well, if we'd had some notice, that would have been wonderful. We had zero notice. People were scrambling and wigging out. And, you know.
Did many people lose their survival gear?
I could honestly tell you, I got here kind of late, but I think there was a few, and They threw it out. If the police confiscated it, they would take it down and have it in for evidence. But a lot of these people thought it was the...
Evidence of what? City council cruelty?
Well, not necessarily. Just taking their possessions. If you saw a crappy looking, a dirty looking sleeping bag or a pillow or foam or clothes that looked like, you know, they were... could have bugs or some kind of crud in them, then they would take that, and their plan was ultimately was to throw it away.
Police or the Rangers or both?
Rangers and or both. More so the Rangers.
Did people come back Wednesday night and Thursday night and Friday night and last night?
Yeah, they did. After about 8 o'clock or so on Wednesday, then the last few nights. Thursday night and Friday night were very calm and quiet.
And the people that came back were not the Rangers, but they were the survival sleepers. So seizing the property and destroying it, and again, it's not clear why Hans was sure that the property was going to be destroyed, though that has been the experience of numerous people that they've reported to me, unable to reclaim their property, told it was not there, or when it was, they do got access finally, as Dreamcatcher did, to property at the police station. They found it had been kept outside in the rain, back of the police department. That's what I found with Peace Camp 2010 property 7 years ago. It's a kind of utter contempt and disregard, a maltreatment of a whole class of people based upon the notion that they're somehow subhuman and don't deserve the rather basic elementary regard that you would give anyone, even someone who's accused of a crime. But these people aren't criminals at all. They're simply trying to survive. More from Survival Sleepout at City Hall on May 7th.
I hear this again.
How many people would you say?
Probably Wednesday and Thursday, Friday, were maybe 8 or 10. And that was primarily our little quiet group here. And then starting Friday and Saturday night, then the other groups started rolling in all hours of the night, hooping and hollering and stuff. So,
how about during the day? Is there a lot of activity here during the day?
No, just here. Those guys are pretty much out of here. The Rangers pretty much move stuff along. If you're not sitting by your stuff, you have half an hour. Otherwise, they'll take it. So a lot of these guys on this side pick their things up, and they will disperse and come back when it's dark.
Which I see some folks under the eaves up there.
I have no idea. They're new. I just saw them when I came back from...
your job search? Oh, you mentioned a couple days ago you did a job search.
Oh, yeah, I did for myself. Yeah, just to look around and up to the mountain areas primarily, because that's where all the devastation was, and I wanted to just get to know the area and get to know, you know, what kind of stuff was going was
Are
wrong.
Are you under the eaves much at night?
Not at all. Not allowed to. We're only on the street half of the sidewalk.
Because, I mean, I noticed three people up there. You say they're new, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, a couple of faces are familiar from last night, but, you know, again, it's just the drug part. It's loud, obvious drug stuff. We don't do that crap up here. You know, there's no drinking or drugging up here. Maybe a little pot somewhere, but I can't really...
Pot? Shocking. And we've been talking with...
Hans Albertson.
Thanks, Hans.
Claudio Martinez.
Hey, Claudio, and you say it's been kind of wacky.
Yeah, it's been kind of wacky out here. Just a lot of a disorganization.
And are people interested in any in this upcoming May 9th march and rally at City Hall or not?
I think people are just mostly just getting by day to day over here. I don't think there's very much of a focus on the May 9th thing. It's mostly just a day-to-day thing out here.
Are any people coming around who are planning the May 9th thing offering to help here at all, other than some guy with a audio device sticking it in your face?
Actually, the Food Not Bombs people have been coming here regularly on Tuesdays, but aside from that, there's been this one woman, Merity, who brings by food. She brought by some bratwursts tonight, and there's one person up in who's been coming. He works at this place called the Redwood Glen. It's some sort of I think it's some sort of conference center up in Scotts Valley, and he brings their extra food down here.
That sounds good.
Yeah, so there's been some support, not a support that we can guarantee and rely on. It seems to be kind of hit and miss.
Are you here during the day?
I'm here sometimes during the day, mostly in the library in downtown.
What do you notice in the library?
I notice that, it's been shut down a couple days for some water leak, but it seems to operate pretty smoothly. I think it would be better if they upgraded the computer system and had microphones and cams on the computers. The computers are outdated, and the library hours. I think that every library in every city all over the United States should be 24 hours, because that would be a perfect place to be, have a safe space in every city. There should be at least one safe space 24 hours.
How about the Senior Computer Lab Center? Have you ever been to that?
I haven't been to the Senior Computer Lab, but I think that people are getting good help over there.
I think that's, I know I've heard they're going to move in offices instead. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Well, I've even heard that eventually what they're going to do is possibly vacate this library location and build another library or something like that, and then use this for like storage or for city purposes. But I don't know what is in the master plan, but I do know that cities...
Master's plan?
Yeah, I do know that cities of San Jose and San Francisco built these huge multi-million-dollar 10-story libraries that still are not open 24 hours.
Oh, why should they? Ordinary folks have houses to go to, right?
Yeah, not everybody does, yeah.
And anything you want to add, Claudia?
It's interesting how well this actual sleepout has worked, although there's factions of like the tweakers and the non-tweakers, and then the senior citizens and the younger people. It seems to be people have been seeming to get some good sleep at night, and I've had, I think, less hassling. There's been no first alarm security coming by, and the police and rangers have hauled off a lot of gear, which happened last week. Their actual presence...
Was only one time, or...?
Yeah, that was one time last week, but they've done it before, where they hauled off trucks of
Not since
gear.
Then.
Not since then, but they're... The threat is there. There has to be a constant watch on people's possessions, and I think that...
How do you deal with that yourself? Do you have just someone you trust you leave your stuff with?
Well, I just have very few possessions, so that if my stuff is taken, it's just not... I don't lose that much.
We've been talking with...
Claudio Martinez.
Thanks, Claudio.
I've also been circulating a Survivor Sleepers support sign-up list, which... You can be a part of this if you want. If you want to be supportive, I've listed all kinds of different ways. One of them is to join a phone, Twitter, or email tree to be on call, to be informed about ongoing harassment. Another is helping to organize public support for additional sleeping gear to replace that stolen by law enforcement as abandoned or evidence. A third is to check in with sleepers in the morning by phone or by person to monitor events the previous night. A fourth is to plan publicity and protest actions to support this nightly survival encampment, which is the only shelter homeless people have in this city and a community created by them. A five is to assist the Freedom Sleepers who appear on Tuesday night in planning and supporting the protest coming up, the May 23rd protest and the Sleep Inn at City Hall. Sixth is to provide food, water, or protective rain gear when possible to the survival sleepers. Seven is to give additional support as dictated by your conscience and imagination. These are some few suggestions I've got. Then I added a few. Eight, visit during the evening to provide support and gather information. Nine, assist in record keeping. 10, write accounts of the ongoing activity, post video and audio. And then 11, perhaps most important for me, and I actually began to get a little support on this from the HUF meeting on Wednesday, the Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting that we had, help organize the tasks and those undertaking them, because we get people who are signed up and we need to kind of help put them together. I've got lists, and I have sent out one email and not gotten much response from those who've already signed up. Maybe that will change, because a number of people did sign up on Tuesday night when the May 9th sleepout happened.
I hoarded all the fruits and all the vegetables and grains. I kept them for myself, but made a price that you could pay. And from this early pattern, a structure did become. And that's about the only thing that governments have done. I hired you to work for me so you could buy my food. Created an economy that barely gave a clue. That you did all the labor, but I got all the funds. And that's about the only thing that governments have done. Giant fortress where my family could reside. I filled your workers up with myths of patriotic pride. I filled my life with luxury and politics and fun. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. I sent the children off to schools to be taught and trained in the roles that benefit and keep the system maintained. I kept them from their history and slowly made them dumb. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. I launched a million wars in the name of private greed. Killed off all the natives from the mountains to the sea. I murdered them with slavery and smallpox and guns. And that's about the only thing the government has done. I built with brick a place for those who wouldn't play my game. Who refused to fight my wars for me or papers to my name. I built a giant prison wall so people couldn't run. And that's about the only thing the government has done. Some of you back from freedom with my silly bill of rights. Used all the proper language so you wouldn't rise to fight. I fooled you all with imagery, now look what I've become. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. Yes, I fought long and hard to secure my place on top. The bombs and tanks and crack cocaine and violence from the cops. I kept you apathetic and this is how I've won. And that's about the only thing the governments have done. Yeah, that's about the only thing the governments have done.
That's the only thing the governments have done, again by Ryan Harvey. You're listening to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides every Thursday evening and Sunday morning at 9:30. Call in if you have any thoughts, 423-4833. I will answer questions and call you back. Or I may answer the phone, but it's not a live show, so you won't be able to go on the air. So let's turn now to the May 9th rally of last Tuesday. And I'm going to kind of let it speak for itself. So here comes the speaking.
And we're at the rally.
A little bit about the organization.
Keep speaking.
It's really a cross-section of students, residents, labor, people of color. People have really come out for this issue so that we are delighted to have everyone here.
And this is actually happening. It began at the county courthouse at 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. A smaller crowd. I thought it was originally 10 or 20 people, then 30 or 40, then 50 or 60. And by the time, hours later, when we were at the City Hall, it had grown to 100 or more. And their voices were loud, and that moved me. But here's some of the earlier part of that rally.
Some of the sponsoring organizations
are about 80 people.
Food Not Bombs, the Freedom Sleepers,
we're at the courthouse,
Santa Cruz, Huff, Project Pollinate, Drew's Youth, Santa Cruz Solidarity Network, Santa Cruz Tennis Organizing Committee, and the Santa Cruz Tennis Association, as well as the UAW 2865. And I'll tell you something, the UAW 2865 is a labor union that represents 12,000 student academic workers, and we are very, very pleased to have them as a sponsor for this protest. Thank you so much. Also, we received some assistance, but not sponsorship, from the ACLU of Northern California, the Santa Cruz County Chapter, and the Association of Faith Communities of Santa Cruz County. So we really have a broad coalition of folks who've come together over this issue. I want to let you know that we as a group are demanding that there be an immediate rent freeze, an immediate emergency rent freeze in Santa Cruz. An immediate end to the sleeping ban. That there be affordable housing for all, and there be shelter for everyone. One of the things that they'll be talking about tonight at City Hall when they talk about the Homeless Coordinating Committee's final report is a year-round walk-up shelter, which is something that we have been looking for and asking for and demanding for a long period of time. Although it's a long-range strategic plan, at least it's something we can discuss with them. Let me tell you a little bit about what we're going to be doing here today. We're gathering up here. The Raging Grannies in a moment will sing us into the rally of protest. And then we'll be having Annika and Leo of the Students United with Renters speaking on rental rights. We're very delighted to have them here today. We will then be marching in the street on the right-hand lane across the street over to the post office. At the post office, you will be treated to the site of the anti-homeless fence. they built around, that they're trying to restrict homeless folks from being there and receiving the meals and services from Santa Cruz Food Not Bomb. They are feeding 120 to 200 people every Saturday and Sunday. Nathan and Abby, thank you so much for doing all that. At the post office, Nathan and Abby will speak. He, of course, is the co-founder of the Worldwide Food Not Bomb. Abby Samuels is the founder, along with several of us, of the Freedom Sleepers. She is also a board member of ACLU Santa Cruz County, so they'll be speaking there. We'll then be marching down Pacific Avenue and taking a loop around before we get to the City Hall. At City Hall, we'll have Drew speaking, we'll have Cynthia Berger speaking, the Santa Cruz Senate Union, we'll have music there, and we'll have some other things going on that'll take us between when we get there at 5 o'clock until 7 o'clock. When we get there, if oral communication is still available at City Council, you're all welcome to go in and speak to any item on the City Council agenda. But tonight at 7 o'clock, there is one full session devoted to the Homeless Coordinating Committee's final report, which I'm hoping that all of you have at least taken a peek at and read. It contains about 20 items that they think will be immediately addressing shelter and housing in Santa Cruz. And you can make your own judgment about that. And certainly you'll all have an opportunity. Each and every one of you will have an opportunity to address that item during that session. We will be there for as long as it takes for every person here to have their voice. And every person in Santa Cruz should have a voice when we're talking about housing for all and no penalty for poverty.
All right.
So I want to thank you again for coming, and thank you, organizing committee. We're going to have the Raging Grannies next day sing one song for us to get us in the mood, and then we'll have Annika and Leo. We'll be talking Students United with Renters, so we'll really get into the substantive part of this rally, and then we will be walking across into the street on the right-hand lane and going over the post office. So thanks, all of you, for being here. This is fantastic. This is really what Santa Cruz is all about. You know, those of us who work for this and organize for this, we really are pleased to have a broad demographic, including the students. Thank you so much for being here. I know this is a big issue for you, but it's something that we've all united on for people who have no shelter and are being penalized for their poverty.
Ladies and gentlemen, raise your hands.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This one is actually called Don't Stress Us Out.
It's the microphone.
Oh, give us toilets and showers and beds to lay us down. Don't fence us out. Ugly fences to devastate the beauty of our town. Don't fence us out. When you're sitting on the beds on the sun of a morning, you might believe there's hope for us that's still unborn. Forget the painful sting of other people's scorning. Don't fence us out. We're on hard times, lost our families, lost our homes, jobs that used to earn our bread. Some ask for dimes, others proud or scared or sick, just want a place to lay our heads. So let us eat healthy foods made by friendly volunteers. Don't fence us out. Don't be gross, don't be mean, be compassionate and kind. Don't fence us out. If you walk in our shoes with the blues beside you, you'd cry for all the troubles that this life supplied you. Speak up for fellow humans, let your conscience guide you. Don't fence us out.
And it's interesting, those kinds of lyrics about this, about the post office fence, that the, I guess the post office, but with suspicious interactions and emails between city officials concerned about the homeless around the post office, that is to say, at the visible presence of homeless people around the post office, were involved in that. This is, I rarely have I seen, it's happened, but
not so much recently, local lyrics. I do a lot of composing of local lyrics myself, or used to. My most endless, with many lyric songs, is Downtown, the one originally sung by Petula Clark with Homeless lyrics. And actually, we were taken to court, those of us who sang it outside the Bookshop Coonerty, or Bookshop Santa Cruz, as it's also known, way back in 2010. So it's good to hear that the Raging Grannies, however off-key they may be, and then they were somewhat, are out there talking about the local issues and trying to do something about it. That's heartening for me. Back to the May 9th rally.
The Raging Grannies, hopefully with us on the City Hall that we can hear, the more we can prevail upon them to do something more later. But right now we want to get into the first of our issues really today. I mean, we're talking about, you know, immediate rental freeze, we're talking about affordable housing, we're talking about shelter, and we're talking about ending the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, the most criminal ordinance that's on our books today. We want to have that repealed entirely, and that's the mission of the Freedom of Speech. But the first order of business, we can have Annika and Leo. They were with the Students United with Renters. All right, Leo, please come up.
Hi, I'm Annika. I'm here with my friend Leo, and we're representing Students United with Renters. We're a new collaborative organization of student renters and community members who are concerned and all activated around the topic of the housing crisis and housing justice. And as a group, we all are united under the belief that housing is a right. Everyone should have safe, affordable housing. As students, we are members of the Santa Cruz community, and we need to hold the university accountable for the impact that they have on the housing crisis that displaces locals. In the next year, the university is planning on admitting 300 additional students on top of the 15,000 students they admitted this year, and 600 to 800 beds in the next 2 years. And it is irresponsible to admit these many students without considering the impact that it will have on the students' well-being, living in overcrowded situations, but furthermore, on the community. And so we as a group are united to be against the irresponsibility of the university to do that.
So on-campus housing is anywhere between $17,000 to $19,000 a month for a student to share a double with another person. I don't know who really can afford that. I can't, so I know that there are many others like myself who are pushed out into what we call the local renting economy, and that's really what contributes to the displacement of people who have lived here a lot longer than us, people who don't make enough money to keep up with that kind of demand, and so that's really what we're up against, and that's why we all feel exploited by this situation, by the housing crisis. It's something experienced by students and community members both, and if you feel upset or angry about what's happening, we strongly encourage you to come out to the City Council meeting on May 23rd, which our Chancellor of UC Santa Cruz, George Blumenthal, will be present, and we'll all be voicing our concern. We want to hold him and the university accountable for this increase in enrollment and what it's doing to our community. As students and as SIR, we're really committed to the values of the survival sleepers and what this march is representing for all of us here today. We reject that it should be illegal to be poor or homeless or to fulfill the basic need of sleep. We want an end to the sleeping ban, and we want a rental freeze as well. We're excited to be marching with you guys today. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Lee and Annika, and thank you for mentioning the survival sleepers. You know, the Freedom Sleepers had their first sleep on July 4th of 2015. This Tuesday is the 95th Tuesday in a row that we've been there. And thanks mainly to a lot of folks who made that happen. But particularly, I want to point out Keith and Abby, who...
Actually, it was the 96th. That was a frequently committed error, but my records are different. Next Tuesday will be the 97th Tuesday that the Freedom Sleepers have come to City Hall.
They've provided the really the comfort and the care and the consideration and the compassion for that group every Tuesday night. What's grown out of that is what we call now the survival sleepers. There are people sleeping in City Hall every single night. A group of as many as two dozen or more sleeping there every single night. And some of us have taken it upon ourselves to go a night and just go check up on them. So that's something that you can do yourself. I go on Monday night, the Rabbi Phil Posner goes on Thursday, just to go to check by, to see them, to give their support. You don't really have to bring them anything or just anything but a smile and a kind word, but they're there on the front line. They are there because they have no place to go. And they're the visible presence that all of us should be if we're ever going to get housing and shelter in Santa Cruz. And that's why we're doing what we're doing today. I want to, before we start marching, I do want to point out and thank Sanctuary Santa Cruz for being here, Michael Gassier, Lenison Saldana, always here, always down for the cause, so we thank you so much. Now we're going to start our march over to the post office. We'll probably go down the handicap ramp, go out to the street, and then across the street into the far right lane. We have signs here that you can carry. There are a couple of chants that we'd like to do along the way. So we'll see how that goes. But this group, of course, will... And Danny, you have something?
Yeah, if you haven't signed up yet, if you want to hear about future action, sign up for the post.
Yeah, please sign up with Danny. They've got the sign up anytime along the way. We will be gathering strength as we go along. There already is a large crowd over at City Hall. There are people who are going to be joining us at the post office. As I say, Keith and Abby be addressing us there. So this is going to be a great day, a great evening. And for those of us who want to be Freedom Sleepers, you have an opportunity to sleep out with the Freedom Sleepers tonight all night long. And many of us are going to be doing that. So it's going to be a terrific night just to be in Santa Cruz and express your concern for this issue. So now let's go down across this way, down the handicapped ramp. I'll lead us out, and we'll go across the street. And then my understanding is that Keith, the Food Not Bombs truck, will be leading the procession, either in the front or in back. I'm not really sure. Keith will be in the back, so we'll be protected from the back. And as we go, so let's get going.
Hey, that was Steve Blake. Signs, sleeping is a right. Freedom Sleepers, sleeping is not a crime.
I'm sorry.
I dream of sleeping. Stop the hate.
Fight!
Housing is a right. Housing is a right. And I, where's my hug you fat-tracted baby?
How are you?
So.
And that was the first part of the May 6th rally, which gathered at the courthouse at 3:30 on Tuesday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Were you there at the rally? Do you want to be there at the May 23rd rally? Would you like to help out between rallies to help the survival sleepers? Call 423-4833 for more information, and I'll try to get you to sign up to do this or that. 423-4833.
Stronger as I travel through my time, making sense of the emptiness from things I've left behind, and finding out it's better to be present in my life than frozen in the moments when I thought I had it right. You know, the breeze don't always blow in one direction. It twists and turns from what's in its past reaction, and the best thing that you can do is accept it or reflect it. Growing up fast in a world that's growing too. Sometimes keeping my eyes open is the best thing I can do. And it's teaching me again how to find comfort in a smile, to overcome the walls that I erected as a child. And I can read the intentions of the things that I have done, and I can see their reflections in the man that I've become. And I will become the type of man that I look for.
Ryan Harvey and his song The Man I Look For. So today's San Jose Mercury News has a story, Renter Protection Enacted, which gives some kind of hope, although it's really hard to tell since this is a story by a big mainstream newspaper. They actually probably won't call it the Monopoly San Jose newspaper, the only major newspaper there. Though I'm not sure how important newspapers are anymore, considering online stuff. I don't know how deeply this article goes into what should have been enacted and what the real problems are, but I'm going to read a bit of it. Renter Protection Enacted. A recent spate of no-cause eviction spurs council vote to start ordinance immediately by Ramona Gawargas, San Jose. Renters and housing advocates who have urged lawmakers for nearly four decades to require that landlords cite a reason before ousting a tenant finally found success amid soaring Silicon Valley rents and a critical shortage of affordable housing. After adopting landmark renter protections last month against no-cause evictions, a move advocates didn't see coming a year ago, San Jose elected leaders Tuesday took the bold step of making them effective immediately. It was the right combination of tenants getting active and involved and the right makeup on the city council, Sandy Perry, president of the Affordable Housing Network of Silicon Valley, said of the outcome Wednesday. It never seemed like the right time, but the housing crisis is worse than ever. There wasn't much political maneuvering room for people who opposed the policy on the city council. Landlord groups who say the new rules violate property rights and make it too hard to evict troublesome tenants said they're considering a ballot measure to overturn or modify it. We're looking at all possible options and opportunities to either make the ordinance workable or to delay its implementation, said Joshua Howard, vice president of the California Apartment Association, adding that his group is still educating property owners on complying with the new rules and is considering a referendum or ballot measure in 2018. In a 9-2 vote, the San Jose City Council on Tuesday voted to adopt an urgency ordinance requiring landlords to cite one of a dozen reasons for refusing to renew a lease, such as non-payment of rent, property damage, or criminal activity. And I just want to pause to note that the same time that Santa Cruz City Council members were babbling about getting together with the county at some time in the indefinite future to, well, they'd say it was going to be fairly soon, but they gave no deadline and they appropriated no money to talk about issues of protection, well, not even about protection for homeless people, but potential shelter, potential storage space, potential electrical outlets for people to charge their stuff, but no specifics in time and money. The San Jose City Council was going further. It had enacted just eviction protections, requiring that an eviction by a landlord be just before it be done. Now they were, on Tuesday, the San Jose City Council enacted a provision that this go into effect immediately. And that was, of course, because landlords were suddenly raising rents rapidly to try to beat the deadline on the ordinance. Some of the more specific reasons that landlord can cite for eliminating or evicting a person, according to a second article here, which is in the Silicon Valley Business Journal, so it may be actually more extensive, at least from the landlord's point of view, because I would imagine the Silicon Valley business folks are maybe some of them landlords. The 12 reasons landlords can evict a resident under this new ordinance are non-payment of rent, material or habitual lease violation, damage to the apartment, refusal to sign a new agreement, nuisance behavior, refusing access to the apartment, unapproved holdover subtenant, substantial rehabilitation, Ellis Act removal, that is when a landlord opts to take a building off the market, owner move-in, order to vacate, or vacation of unpermitted apartment. I guess that means vacation rental of unpermitted apartment, and I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's 12 reasons. Some of these seem pretty slim to me and a nice opportunity for the landlord to just make a claim. Nuisance behavior, substantial rehabilitation, Ellis Act removal, when a landlord opts to take a building off the market, which is what landlords have done, because then they want to suddenly raise rents and kill rent control. Once a tenant moves out, you get to raise the rent to as high as you want, to market rate or beyond, usually not beyond, because you want to compete. Or, I don't know, nowadays, the more money you can get, the better, and it goes higher and higher. That in Santa Cruz, we have no either rent control or just protection renter situation here. Members Johnny Comas and Dev Davis opposed in the 9-2 vote to immediately implement the urgency ordinance requiring the landlords to cite one of the dozen reasons. The policy went into effect minutes after the council vote and is expected to impact 450,000 renters citywide. The property owners chose greed over housing families, said Jose renter Gabriel Rodarte. Greed is a creature that keeps stuffing its mouth with more and more money. Families just want peace. Let's stop the greed. But landlords, who came out in droves for the meeting Tuesday, jeered and booed the council's decision, calling the rules an assault on their property rights and making comparisons to communism. We put our sweat, blood, tears, and life savings into a property, said Richard Lower, a Los Gatos resident who owns rent-controlled units in San Jose. I don't like to evict people, but for the sake of the community, I am forced to take action. And after it's over, the neighbors say thank you. And I'll pause to say, I feel skeptical when I hear this kind, read this kind of thing, but I don't know Richard Lore. I don't know his particular circumstances. But I know that generally giving landlords this kind of power has resulted in a huge escalation of rents and also a huge increase in homelessness and an eviction of people just trying to live and work here who have traditionally done so here in Santa Cruz. Again, I have no figures. Those are my sort of, that's my impression. So, yeah, let's get some figures if we want to get figures, but let's get rent control and rental protection, just eviction protection. Continuing with this story, the contentious meeting Tuesday in San Jose was a stark distinction from last month's council meeting that turned out hundreds of frustrated renters. Housing advocates said landlords are unjustly evicting tenants so they can raise rents in Silicon Valley's soaring housing market. Can you imagine? Other big cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Oakland have similar eviction protections. The protections adopted last month cover all apartments from the day a renter moves in. They were set to take effect in about 45 days. This left open a window in which landlords could oust tenants. City officials said 30 families received no-cause eviction notices after the council approved the initial policy in April. Mayor Sam Liccardo and Councilman Chappie Jones, both of whom voted against the new rules last month, urged the council to consider immediate enforcement to curb last-minute evictions, and apparently voted for them this month. San Jose landlords argue the new policy prevents them from evicting problematic tenants. The Law Foundation of Silicon Valley countered that existing laws give property owners the authority to evict tenants for criminal conduct. The policy against no-cause evictions doesn't increase crime, said attorney Nadia Aziz, and only one city of the 30 with the rules has a high crime rate, Oakland. The city council asked housing officials Tuesday to report back on the policy's outcome in a year. They also agreed to revise amending the law to allow landlords to evict tenants for criminal conduct without having to prove that activity was a nuisance to others. I'm sorry to hear that. This eliminates the need for neighbors to testify against one another, a key concern cited by property owners. While renters celebrated the long-awaited victory Wednesday, many say there is more work to do to make Silicon Valley affordable for all. This doesn't solve the housing crisis. It just stopped the bleeding, Perry said. We still need to find a way to build more affordable housing and hold the tech companies in this area accountable. And that's Ramon Gawargas' story in today's Mercury News. Renter Protection enacted recent spate of no-cause evictions spurs council to vote to start ordinance immediately. Hoping I can get a hold of Sandy Perry, who I actually went to jail with back in, I was arrested with, I don't know, we actually got to jail, for occupying city council chambers up in San Jose in a demand that housing be opened up to homeless people. That was in the early 90s, in the days when people not only marched to city council and made a lot of noise, then actually stayed there and had to be hauled out. You know, sort of like the ABC Black Caucus up on campus last week when it insisted on staying and actually got all their demands met. What a concept. Gee, maybe it should be tried here downtown in Santa Cruz, too. Some more of the May 2nd rally.
So I'm over here at the post office in the vehicle trying to hear Keith.
And so the petition drive was started.
And it's very hard to hear, but I think eventually I got closer. The crowd had increased considerably.
Maybe to 100, although it's really hard to tell. Folks are holding up signs and standing in the shade around the forbidden fence. And Keith's Food Now Bombs van is parked without a driver, sort of in the street, which and we've also, I know, no police officers around, which is always a good sign.
I believe Keith was giving up a history of what was some of the anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz had the development of those laws.
A little bit hard to hear. He's talking about anti-homeless architecture. And let's hear a little more of this.
And then I want to say one other thing before I hand this over to Abby Samuels, who predates me in the Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs movement, and who is a co-founder of the Freedom Sleepers. And this is that tonight at 7 o'clock, there's going to be this introduction of this great master plan about how to solve the homeless crisis here in Santa Cruz. And if people, there's a person by the name of Linda Lee Master here in the back, the March 2000 plan, which is actually more in alignment with really what activists and help the homeless deal with how to solve problems. But sadly, from 17 years later, they haven't implemented the hard work that the city paid for and that Linda was involved in. 17 years. So my anticipation, if we don't keep up the pressure, some of the good ideas that are being, you know, talked about in this plan tonight will never happen. There'll be another 17 years. And the only reason this plan has come out is because people have been protesting. The only reason that it was introduced that there was an abolition of the sleeping ban is because people were protesting.
And, of course, what you'll hear me say later, probably not on this show, but maybe on Sunday if you tune in, because this is a long day of protest, and I'm going to play a lot of it, is that it's not that I would encourage people to go to city council in any hope or expectation that even their loud protests are going to change the council's mind, but rather that it will expose the council's mythology and rhetoric, which they are using as a platform and as a shield and as a kind of a masquerade mask in order to proceed what they're really doing, which has to do with business as usual, running the homeless out of sight, reclaiming property for developers, essentially driving poor and working people out of town on behalf of wealth that's coming in from elsewhere. So the plan that has been proposed is not that, if you've got to make sure that they implement it, because 17 years ago they didn't implement the plan as they should have, and only if you go there can you hold their feet to the fire. That may be Keith's position. I'll have some doubts as to whether he believes that. But it's my position is simply that you get together to raise the issues among each other that helps to dispel these myths, so the broader community can then take the action it needs to take to get these things done. And some people see this as happening through the electoral process. That's very optimistic. I don't think that usually works. But certainly mass marches, mass actions, direct action, there's a lot of vacant buildings in Santa Cruz, is a way of stemming the homeless death rate, stopping the eviction of people from housing, in the sense that if there's other places to go to, it's really all about creating an alternate source of power that people in power have to respond to, if that's your concern about getting people to respond, or that can itself create real changes, as has happened in some other countries. Now, some people may call that revolutionary. That's fine. But it's the changes that need to be made.
They would have never, tried to whitewash the city's anti-homeless campaigns with this document that hasn't been for the freedom sleepers, for people going out to the streets, for protests, for petitions, for people coming to City Hall.
I know,
and
you're
the pressure that people really, in this town, know a lot of people living on the street. All of us are struggling to bear rent to stay above water, so we too don't become homeless. And so the city council, while they're dancing to the tune of the wealthy developers and the people that really believe that they own this town, they know that people like us are the majority, and that if we get organized and we keep out there on the streets and we keep supporting our friends every night that are sleeping on the streets in front of City Hall, they will have to start doing things like ending the sleeping ban.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many people are shocked that it is illegal in this town to sleep between the hours of 11 o'clock at night and 8:30 in the morning outside or in a vehicle. People are like, what? Really? But that is the case.
How many cities have sleeping bans?
And I don't know the number of cities with sleeping bans, but I know they're all over the United States, that there are like at least 70 cities that have banned or restricted the sharing of free food to the hungry. And that for persons reading from the crowd is Linda LeMaster of Housing Now Santa Cruz, one of the organizers and sponsors of this event. Thank you, Linda. As I mentioned over at the courthouse, July 4th, 2015, we founded Freedom Sleepers with Robert Norris, with Rabbi Phil Posner, and with Abby Samuel, who speaks next. Abby is also a member with me of the board of directors of ACLU Santa Cruz County. There isn't anybody in Santa Cruz that feels more compassion, does more for the houseless and unsheltered community than Abby Sanders. She wears her heart on her sleeve. We all love her for that. And the houseless community loves her for that. So, without further ado, my good friend,
thank you.
This is Abby Samuels.
I've been doing the Freedom Sleepers almost 2 years. July will be 2 years. It's been amazing getting to know people that live on our streets.
experience. And beautiful people, they're more in touch with a lot of the earth, reality. There's a lot of people that are really in their houses watching TV. So, I feel so much passion about getting rid of the sweeping ban. All the anti-homeless architecture that's going up throughout the city, including this one, changing the lawn at City Hall to rock, changing my businesses to rocks, changing, putting mosquito boxes under the bridges of the levee, putting mosquito boxes at Wells Fargo, I don't know where else. It's inhumane, cruel.
Mosquito boxes, of course, are the high-pitched sonic devices, sound like something out of science fiction movies, that were placed 3 or 4 years ago, and this was confirmed by Scott Collins, assistant city manager, as I've noted before on earlier shows. He won't tell me where they are, but he's confirmed that they are there, and they did cost money, and they're designed to make areas uninhabitable or discourage people from gathering in certain places. You know, that sort of sound, you know. Although it's apparently so much higher that it's almost unhearable, but it creates a feeling of discomfort, I'm told. I have not actually experienced this, so I have to admit that.
And the city isn't doing anything about it. I have hope, though. I really do. First time something is up and something might shift. And I believe it's because we are not and spooky at City Hall. And just like the peanut bomb, across the street, if you will look at the white condos over there, there's a person in there. The Janet Barnett, who wrote a petition trying to end peanut bomb here.
That ain't right.
That ain't right. So, she did a petition, she got 87 signatures, in 2 or 3 weeks, we did a petition in 3 days, we had over 1,000 signatures.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, before we start, I want to point out a couple of
folks that really have done great work around town that are joining us today, Danny Drysdale and Joshua Berninski, and they do great work in the Oklahoma. We're all by that Jeffrey Smedberg as well, we're all by Jerry Sanders, and all by the way, all 66% of the voting county during the last election. So they must be doing something right, but we appreciate having them here. Now we're going to gather up and we're going to move down Pacific Avenue and kind of form a loop as we go over to City Hall. Heaven is going to be leading the chants as we go through, and it's going to be loud, boisterous. By the time we get to City Hall, there'll be people there to greet us. You know what? Before we leave, how about one more tune for Raging Granny? All right, then.
They caught a couple guys that stole a car at about 2 o'clock in the morning and ended up over there by us. So it was kind of a ruckus, but nothing happened to us. Nothing involved us. That was nice.
And we've been talking with
Hans Albertson.
Thanks, Hans. And we're going down Pacific Avenue. I'm in the car behind this crowd.
I believe it's Hey Hey Ho Ho. The Sleeping Band has got to go. Hard to hear because of the echo along Pacific Avenue. Again, I was driving in my car, which is covered with stickers, down Pacific Avenue behind all the marchers, and nobody threw eggs at the car or booed the marchers, but then again, it was hard to hear, so maybe they did, but it looked like quite a successful and spirited march. Of course, that's fight, fight, fight. Housing is a right. And we've reached the Penny Ice Creamery kiosk and the stop sign at Locust and Pacific.
Even reaching out, there are cities that have lost the Boys and Girls Club out here.
And there's a juggler doing his stuff over there in front of the O'Neill Surf Shop.
That was the same spot at which that same juggler was arrested by Officer Mark Eveleth, who later was at City Hall, and then he was released when video journalists and artists Skelton and Jones from the street not only began videoing, but began juggling themselves. And, of course, it's legal to juggle on Pacific Avenue. Eveleth was wrong. But there are so many laws that make so many things illegal that Eveleth could have used that I guess he just wasn't well prepared that day. Or perhaps, it's hard to say. Eveleth has backed off a bit in any interactions I've had with him. I did that at City Hall on Tuesday. He was telling me I couldn't be walking around the room because that was a violation of the fire marshal's edicts. Now, since 1988, when I first came to the Santa Cruz City Council, I've always walked around the room, and the fire marshal's never had diddly squat to say, even when the room is packed with people. So this I think, is one of the new chill the crowds ordinances that is being enforced by either nervous staff or a politically savvy reactionary element in the staff. I'm not sure which. But in any case, I told him I'm circulating a petition, so he said, oh, well, if that's what you're doing. So he backed off. Similarly, he made a comment to me, I guess we won't have to arrest you for doing some audio recording, indicating that he was aware of prior orders by previous mayors to have me arrested if I were to insist on audio recording from the usual spot I do near the podium, which I did throughout this city council meeting. They haven't changed their rules. They're just not applying them to me because they don't want to disturb the assembly and possibly provoke a lawsuit by arresting me for simply recording their proceedings. So that's good. But what it shows is they aren't changing their policies. They're just changing how they're enforcing a policy, which still allows them to intimidate other people who may want to make a recording of what's going on. I don't know that they're using it for that purpose. I haven't seen that happening. But I haven't seen them explicitly change the policy either. Anyway, back to the procession on Pacific Avenue to City Hall, the May 9th rally, No Penalty for Poverty. And you probably can hear that. It's Rent Freeze Now.
We're now passing, or I'm passing, Dale Williams Jewelers in the wrong direction. Because this is the one-way street, but I'm going the other way, as usual. And that's okay. At the very end of the parade, looks like Sherry Connell is bringing up the rear. There are a couple of folks who are kind of struggling to catch up. There's a couple of folks in a wheelchair. Brent Adams in a bicycle.
And I've mentioned Sherry Connell critically earlier in this broadcast. Sherry's a longtime activist who's worked on a lot of these issues very hard and with great detail, and she's taken a different approach than mine. And my beef with her has always been that she's sought to exclude radicals, or people she regards as radical, from her organizations, which have been open otherwise to other people. At least this is how she used to behave. And actually, she did this recently with the Bearcat protests. Huff was specifically excluded from the protests against the city's police department's abusive acquisition of this armored vehicle, billed as a rescue vehicle, folks may remember, and which is part of the militarized equipment being dumped in police departments all over the country, which is encouraging a military response to by police action. Of course, the pretext is the war on drugs. But, of course, as economic conditions worsen, it'll be the war on people. And we all need to fight this kind of stuff, and we need to fight it together. And it's good to see that things have moved kind of from beyond the traditional historical figures who are always ready to negotiate and dicker and talk nice to the authorities and make sure everyone is well controlled and goes home properly and doesn't step out of bounds. And Sherry was one of those folks. But she's still a part of this, and I want to commend her for being a part of it. It's just important that she not be the head of it or the person in control of it.
And I think it's like kind of a traffic type if I go that way, so I'm turning off. So the gang has reached City Hall, and they were shouting outside. I don't know. And I check it out. It's a council meeting.
It's City Council.
And at this point, I had reached City Hall, almost at the end of this two-hour showtime. I want to let people know that I'm scheduled to meet with the Mayor Cynthia Chase at 11 at City Hall. I'm inviting anybody who wants to join to give me a call. Let me know you're coming, or just show up if you want. 423-4833. Cynthia has, she says, office hours from 9 to 12 every Monday, which is commendable. You know, I'm glad that she has open office hours, just as Sandy Brown says she has office hours Friday from, I think it's from, she has ducked out so many times, although she's been also available at other times. It's Friday. If you want to call Sandy to find out, or any of these people, you can call them at 420-5020. Again, these are city council members who specialize in making promises that are vague enough to drive a Mack truck through, as the cliche goes. And they're also, responding to different constituencies. And also sometimes, though completely well-intentioned, as in the case of Sandy Brown, they will promise things that, while they have every intention of doing them, they can't do, or they won't do, or they just day after day, night after night, week after week, haven't done. You may recall my speaking about this rather repetitiously. I continue to do it. I'm going to call her, actually, after this program is over, because when I spoke to Sandy Brown on Tuesday about the issue of the promises she made publicly, which I played on the radio, that she would be sending emails to the staff requiring information about the Sean Arlt shooting, the witnesses from the police department, the witnesses from the neighborhood, the DA's investigation report, she'll be asking for the correspondence between Chief Vogel and the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, to see just, who's telling the truth about this business of ICE involvement and so forth, and how involved is it still. Need to request specifically stats on the costs of sleeping ban and other anti-homeless ordinance enforcement. Actually, I think it's just specifically the camping ordinance and the being in a park after dark ordinance. This was agreed to 6 weeks ago, and then she kept complaining that she didn't have time or she was stressed. And she did this with such sincerity and such anguish whenever I would talk to her that it was hard not to believe that she wasn't telling the truth. And I had the same experience when I talked to her Tuesday at City Council after the meeting, where she did a number of good things. And she has done the occasional good things, such as, and I've repeated this again and again, opening up the consent agenda, the part of the city council discussion that 10 years ago was banned to public discussion except for a very brief 2-minute period for all the consent agenda items. Now, she said, anyone who wants to talk about a particular item will get 2 minutes to talk about that item, or however much the mayor allows, but it will be pulled as an individual item and it can be discussed that way instead of being crammed together with all the other items. Why is this important? Because almost all the important business of the city happens on the consent agenda. It's done as one big bulk. It zips right through. It's a rubber stamp. And if anybody wanted to actually believe it was sensible to come to City Council to give input, this would be one of the areas you would really want to talk on. So, my confidence in the value of going to City Council and talking to these people generally, unless you're a well-to-do person or a developer or got a couple of attorneys with you, or you help do large campaign contributions, or you have 100 people with you, like happened on May 9th, is kind of spitting into the wind, or at least speaking. I do it mainly to speak to the community through the televised area, and I'm sure there are better ways to speak to the community too, which in my dotage, in my old age, in my being trapped in the ruts I've followed all these years, I haven't really picked up on. I suppose there's always tomorrow. So we're pretty close to the two-hour limit. I think we'll give Sandy a call on the air and point out to her that she actually requested me on Tuesday at the council that if she hadn't done this, taken this action by sending out the emails that I actually gave her a text for that she could send out, that she wanted me to call her on Wednesday night at 5 o'clock and remind her. Well, she hadn't done it. I called her. And I also am going to call her again tonight so that she will be reminded. All she has to do is forward an email or write her own email. And anyone else, I guess, looking at this might say, Robert, why are you doing this? Why are you wasting your time? And I guess to me, it's a kind of a different lesson. I'm well aware of how politicians blow you off and like to pretend they're going to help you and don't. I've seen this happen over the decades with people like Scott Kennedy, who is now dead, and other politicians who pretend to be or even believe they are, but actually slip out of their promises and just shamelessly, without any kind of apology or excuse. Kennedy agreed to come on the show half a dozen times, and each time he failed to show up when he made a specific commitment. Anyway, let's call Sandy and see what, maybe I'll get through to her. You never can tell. I will. Her number again is 246-0399. That's her cell phone number. So let's see if I can reach her.
Voicemail, please leave me a message and I'll call you back.
At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hi, Sandy. This is Robert, and this is actually a radio call. I'm calling you from a broadcast that's going to be broadcast live at 6 o'clock. And I've mentioned my belief in your sincerity. But this is your call back that you requested. Actually, you requested it yesterday, and I gave it to you. And I asked you to get back to me before the meeting with the Homeless United group so we could know what your thoughts were. You haven't gotten back to me on that call, actually on two prior calls, or on the emails per your commitment, promise, suggestion that you were going to do that. So, get back to me. By email, rnorse3@hotmail.com, preferably by a CC to me of the emails that you finally have sent, which I've sent you again. This would be for the second or third time in a week, so that to facilitate your being able to do this at your request, which is what you asked me to do. My number is 423-4833. If other people want to call Sandy on this issue, they can, 246-0399, or other issues. And, Sandy, I'm not quite sure of your office hours for this week because often I'm finding that you're not able to make it in because of health concerns or other conflicts. That's what David Silva's found, too. The phone number to reach you at, of course, is 246-0399. If you ever answer, that is. Thanks. And that was Sandy Brown's answering machine. That was me talking to Sandy Brown's answering machine. Let's go out on a song by Ryan Harvey, another one, and maybe talk to you again on Sunday when we'll continue audio from the May 9th protest and maybe talk some about the upcoming protest and find out what's going on in the days ahead and what's been going on with the survival sleepers and what's going on generally, maybe what's going on with you. Call me between times at 423-4833 and maybe you can be on the air. You can join Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can give me a tip as to where we can find a 10x10 space to set up a studio and you'll get $500.
knock on the door. Here they come to take one more. One
because
more.
You can jail a revolutionary, but you can't jail a revolution. You can run a freedom fighter all around the country, but you can't run freedom fighters around the country.
No matter what country, no matter what year, we were always pursued with the weapon of fear. They came by the night, came by the day.